Howdy, y'all. You're listening to The Managing Up Show, a podcast about leading and managing in the world of technology. I'm your host, Brandon Hayes, and with me this week are Nick Means.
Hey, everybody.
And Travis Weisgood.
Howdy, y'all. So every episode we end with a, hey, if you have any ideas, shoot us a DM or at mention us on Twitter. Get us your feedback. We'd love to hear what you want to talk about. And a recurring one that we've gotten multiple times over the last few years, and something that we've actually recorded at least one, if not multiple episodes on, is one-on-ones. So we've been kicking around the idea the last few weeks as we get together and talk up ideas and such. And all of us feel like, oh, that's been covered so much. It's so remedial. Like everybody knows how to do one-on-ones. And then like, but there's this one thing that I do, or Nick will say, oh, there's this one thing that I do on one-on-ones. And all of a sudden when we start pulling on that thread, there's a whole bunch of really interesting, topics here. So while this, conversation might have some things in it that you've heard before, hopefully there's a couple of things in it that you haven't, and we'll get everybody thinking about how we approach one-on-ones and what they can be, useful for. So to kick off the conversation, I just want to throw out the question to the group here. When you think of a one-on-one, what's the one thing that you could boil it down to that you're trying to do with that one-on-one when you have one with another person that you work with?
Literally my only objective in every one-on-one, the one that I focus on every time without fail, is making sure that they feel heard. If I accomplish that, it doesn't matter what else we do in the meeting. That's the most important thing I could possibly do.
So to rephrase that another way, when you walk into a one-on-one, the thing that that's in the back of your mind going into it and coming out of it is, how can I make sure that the person that I'm talking with gets what they need out of this?
That's a good way to summarize it.
Does that go in every direction? Like, let's say you're having a conversation with your boss. Are you thinking about it the same way as you would as if you're having somebody that's a direct report, or say a skip one-on-one with somebody that reports to somebody that reports to you?
Well, you popped right out of the 101 stuff, didn't you?
Yeah,
this
dude.
This is more advanced.
This is deep water.
Yeah, but I mean, I'll go. I think it's different when you're having one-on-ones with people in a skip level situation, mm-hmm. or people that that you report to. Mm-hmm. That said, I have absolutely had tough conversations with managers of mine when I didn't feel heard and let them know, hey, I'm, you know, over the course of the last few one-on-ones, I feel like, you know, I haven't really been feeling heard. And I'll just say those words to somebody. When Nick said earlier, like when you're running one-on-ones with someone else, and the balance of power is sort of tilted where like, hey, you're the manager and it's a reporting situation. The onus is on me as a manager to make sure the other person feels heard. When it's flipped the other way, like I want to be heard, but it's not my responsibility to make sure that I feel heard. So okay. Now if somebody isn't fulfilling what I think is their responsibility in helping me feel heard, I might let them know that after a while. But no, my goal is very different when I'm going up versus when I'm managing people that are reporting to me. And Nick, I was going to, the same phrase popped into my head. The number one objective is to make sure somebody feels heard.
Travis, does that line up with you?
Yeah, I think so. I wouldn't use the word heard, but that's just not something that's the thing that pops into mind for me. That's why I rephrased to make sure that we were on the same page. I think we're on the same page, just using slightly different wording. Because I've over the course of my career, I've had one-on-ones with just about every, archetype of developer and manager. And every one of them has slightly different needs. And what they're bringing to the one-on-one. And one of the key things I do when I'm setting up a one-on-one with somebody in the first meeting or one of the very first meetings that I have with them is I just say like straight up, this is a meeting for us to have a conversation. I want you to drive it. And it can be whatever you want. If you want to come and talk about your hobbies, great, we can do that. If there are problems at work or successes at work you want to talk about, I'm happy to do that. The only rule that I have, and it's a soft rule at that, is I don't want one-on-ones to become status meetings. I feel like that's something that hopefully I know what you're doing, you know what I'm doing, and it's not just a status report. If it's just a status report, we can do that asynchronously, probably. I've had people that report to me that that's really what they want, is they want to do that status report and have a conversation about all of the things that they're working on, whether it's for reassurance or just clarification on their part. They want to have that conversation. So as you think about the actual process of having a one-on-one, are there any things that you do, whether it's the length of time, the frequency, that you think about that are important, that you're like, okay, these are some minimum things that we're going to do?
So, I mean, I think probably the only hard and fast rule I have about one-on-ones is, once you set a cadence, don't cancel, period. The only way that I will cancel a one-on-one is if I'm canceling an entire week of one-on-ones and I'm not going to meet with anybody on the team that week because I'm out of office. Otherwise, always reschedule. Because it's, you know, it was interesting. I had a conversation with somebody on my new team recently. They're of the orientation that generally, if they don't have anything to talk about in a one-on-one, they'll just let their manager know and they won't meet that day. And so we got to have a really interesting conversation about that. And I was like, you know, I'm diametrically opposed on that particular point, because I think it's very important for us to hold that space open and allow that conversation to happen. And it's, you know, it's your one-on-one time with me to bring up whatever's on your mind. It doesn't even have to be work stuff. It usually isn't work stuff, as a matter of fact. I spend as much time talking about non-work stuff in one-on-ones as work stuff. But the important thing is that you hold that time consistently. And it's as much a signal to that person that they are important to you and that their contribution to your team matters as it is anything else.
Yeah, 100% agree. I've had some folks who are like that. They start reporting into me second, third one-on-one. Hey, they'll send me a message on Slack. Hey, I don't have anything to talk about today. Do you just want to cancel a one-on-one? I'm like, no, let's have it. Let's get together and talk. And if we don't have anything to fill up the time, we'll cancel. We can call it early. Invariably, we've never called one early. The second you get on the phone or get in the same conference room, or one of my favorites is to go for a walk. The second you start that process, there's always something to talk about. And I've really, deepened relationships with individuals in those one-on-ones where there was quote unquote nothing to talk about.
I've definitely had the same experience. As a quick aside, I had to pull up the history of our podcast, and, we last talked about this about 3 years ago.
Really?
And it was Nick's first episode with us as a group. So basically our podcast began on this topic 3 years ago.
So is that the rule that we have to talk about one-on-ones every time I change jobs? Because I had just changed jobs at that point. And I just changed jobs again.
Yeah, it's going around. I'm actually in a transition myself at the moment. And I don't know that there's a topic I've learned more about because I haven't practiced anything more. And in the intervening 3 years, I had some opinions and I had some thoughts on cadence. And I haven't listened back to that episode in a long time, but if I were to go back and listen to it, I'm sure I would say what I learned then that I still know now about cadence. And it is, don't try to do every 2 weeks. because you're going to miss one every once in a while, and you're not going to talk to your teammate for a month. And not talking to somebody for a month is where all hell breaks loose. This is where co-working relationships go to die, is in the stories that fill up the space in between weeks and weeks of no contact. Mm-hmm. And so part of what keeping a cadence up is actually reinforcing the story that Nick was telling a second ago. The story, and to sort of tie together what you two were saying, the story is that this person is heard, that they're respected, and that you care about them as a human being more than as a cog in the machine. And you tell them and show them that by holding that space. And when you do that, that person will choose to use that time. It just doesn't come up for me, the idea that somebody of course would never come to me and say, hey, I don't really have anything to talk about this week. Because they know, hey, this is where I get to go feel heard for a minute. It's a break. It's something to potentially look forward to. And at minimum, it's not going to be it's not going to be a waste of their time. That's the honestly the worst criticism I could give to anybody's one-on-one. Like, there are good ones and there are bad ones, but when it's a waste of your time, that's a real strong signal that something's really out of whack. And I'm not going to say I've never done that to people. I've definitely done that. Like, one way I can waste their time is by turning it into a status meeting. And it's easy to slip into that because that's an easy conversation to have about what's going on. And it's so weird how, now maybe it's not that weird, but it feels weird to me when I get in that situation. I'm ready to talk about anything in the world and they think it's a status meeting. Like, here's what's going on. I'm like, I don't care. That sounds like an email. What questions do you have about that work? So I guess that's where I would open this discussion up. What are the sort of things that over the course of, let's say, a month of one-on-ones, you want to make sure get covered? You may not cover them every week, but over the course of a month, or, you know, every once in a while, what sort of stuff in your experience winds up being a productive use of time during those?
So in my experience, it evolves, as the relationship evolves. And I mean, that's true in any conversation, in any sort of relationship you have in your life. The conversations with your friends are different now, years after they're friends, than they are in the first 6 months. I mean, you're just getting to know each other. And I think the same is true, in a working relationship. I have totally different conversations with people that I've been working with for weeks or months, or even just a year, than people that it might be this is the third time I've worked with them. We just have a different relationship, and our one-on-ones happen at a much different, bandwidth, because of that relationship. So for me, if I'm going back and looking over, a collection of one-on-ones, it's not that there's necessarily a set of topics that I want to cover with the person. I want to see, is this relationship, advancing? Are we getting to that place where we are able to communicate at higher bandwidth? And to create the space where that type of relationship can flourish. And I think that takes work to build that trust, to just get to know the person. And some of that's going to be talking about work and talking about the way you're approaching problems and areas that you're getting stuck on. Trying to understand the way that they view the company from their perspective inside the company, so that you can better understand as their manager, how you can provide context. But I'm looking for that relationship to be enhanced and feel like the one-on-one we're going to have next week is we're going to be able to go more in depth. And I don't really want to define what depth is, because it's going to be a little different for every person that I'm talking with, but go more in depth in the way that we have one-on-ones than we did a month ago. Then we did 3 months ago, then we did 6 months ago, so on and so forth. I want that to be an evolving part of the relationship. So I guess that's when I think about a one-on-one, I don't think about it as one of the checkboxes necessarily this is a job duty that you do. It actually really frustrates me when you go and you look at a job posting and you have a manager posting or like a director or above, and one of the responsibilities is hold regular one-on-ones with the people who report to you. I'm like, what kind of horror show is this company?
Are you going to hire somebody that you have to tell that to? Really?
It's crazy the number of times. Like, just hop on LinkedIn sometime and go read through, especially engineering manager postings, the number of times that's listed as a responsibility. And all I can say is that just screams to me that, okay, they've had a manager who was having quarterly one-on-ones with folks and the team said, no, we can't do this.
This is one of those moments that I wish we had video for this, because we all have the biggest smiles on our face about this.
Well, I think all of us have probably known somebody, if not directly, and in some cases actually manage these people, where it's a revelation when you say, no, you're going to have one-on-ones regularly. Like, you have to. But because they're thinking at it from that pure efficiency model, and they're like, well, we do daily standups. We know what's going on with each other. We don't need to. Well, hang on just a second.
You didn't tell me in our standup that you had to take your dog to the vet yesterday.
Yeah, so to that point, it's deeper. It's a little, you go a little bit deeper.
I mean, that's so the mode that I'm in right now is very much trust building mode. So my one-on-ones are all about creating space, about building rapport, about getting to know each other a little bit beyond the work level so that we have that relationship to fall back on. Mm-hmm. You know, because you have to have that rapport with somebody for them to feel safe taking constructive feedback from you when you inevitably have some to give. There needs to be some relationship to fall back on so that you can ask them to tweak their behavior slightly and them still feel like their relationship with you is in a safe place.
I 100% agree. And when you were describing that, that reminded me of something I think you've quoted multiple times on this podcast in different contexts. So I'll be the one to bring it up this time. But it's Brené Brown's Jar of Trust. And the idea that you're adding marbles to that jar, you can smash it real quick and get rid of all of that trust, but it takes time to actually build that up because you can't just dump all the marbles in at once. You have to go through that process, and one-on-ones are a key place to do that. It's a key way to build up that relationship.
Yeah. Probably my favorite way to do that in a one-on-one besides just sort of, you know, I can verbalize and connect with people and show them, hey, I'm interested in more parts of your life than just the one side of the cube you see at work. Like I'm interested in the dimensionalities of your life and personality and how those things fit together. So you can show that you care. Possibly more importantly, in a trust building exercise, is actually for me to take homework away from these one-on-ones and say, you know, what, like, ask intelligent questions contextually and situationally around, it sounds like this is a thing that you're trying to do. What's something that I could do that would work? I'm trying to remember where I read this. I'm sure I stole it from somebody like Laura Hogan. And the question that I've learned to ask is, what does support from your manager look like in this case? And for some reason, that question goes diagonally and bypasses people's natural resistance to ask for help. Mm-hmm. And because now they're just describing what support looks like. And you go, huh, that's interesting. That sounds like something I could take away as homework. Mm-hmm. And then one of the things very different about the way I run one-on-ones now, I actually go in with notes docs. And since, you know, everybody in the universe is remote at the moment anyway, I used to write down notes on paper. And they were pretty rough to try to follow and then search back. And it's great. Now I get to keep a shared notebook where an individual can add items to the agenda, or there could be no agenda, but I definitely take notes. Mm-hmm. And it puts me in a situation where I'm like forced to listen because I'm trying to take notes in as close to verbatim as possible, because I've learned also I will misinterpret. And so when I take notes as verbatim and say, okay, I'm typing what they're saying as they say it, not the entire conversation, but, you know, key things, and in a shared document that they can see and hold me accountable for. And then I have a special section. I learned this from my boss, Ernie Miller. He has a section at top that says, here's our agreements. Here's the homework for you. Here's me. Here's when it's due. And then I go actually dump those assignments into my personal Trello board and make sure that that's a thing that I follow up on and say, okay, this is due on this day. And the cool thing is you do that a couple times for somebody. You show up with your homework done on somebody's behalf and say, hey, you asked me about this. You said you weren't sure what the policy with HR is about this one thing. I went and I asked and I got the answer for you. I dug in, or I found that, you know, it's usually some sort of digging. Mm-hmm. And you retrieve the answer for them and bring it to them. And they're like, oh, this is a person who actually gives a crap with their actions and not just their words. And that's like, you get bonus marbles on that one.
100%. I've used Google Doc, paper on Dropbox, private wikis on Confluence, like any type of tool that you can keep notes and have multiple people in there editing it. I'll add those to a one-on-one meeting invite. And every time, like the Google Doc is probably the simplest one I've done. You have one document and at the top, you put the date and agenda and bullet points. And that's the one thing that I'll often do on one-on-ones on my side is say, okay, this is your meeting. I want you to run it. And I'd like you to have an agenda. Like, what are the things you want to talk about? And ask them, just the only thing I would ask is if there's things that you really want to dig into, if you can get them in the day before our one-on-one, And that gives me a little bit of time to try to do any homework I can ahead of time, to come with answers. If it's the, hey, what's the policy on this, that kind of thing. Or if there's something specific about a particular project that you want to dig into, you're looking for some additional context on something that's happening in the company. That gives me a little bit of an opportunity to have that. And after the agenda, there's, just general notes and, any action items. And I found that's a great way to start off the conversation, especially if it's a, if you're still building that rapport. Hey, these are the things we were talking about last week that you were going to do, that I was going to do. Generally, they're more on my plate. Here's the answers to this. And it's also great to have as just a living document, like, hey, every week, like, well, let's end it with the next one. Let's move the action items up to that so we can see it. And the agenda is here this week. If anything comes to mind, drop it in here. This isn't a hard and fast that we have to go through every one of these, but this gives us some rough talking points and make sure that we're covering the things that you want to cover.
Yeah. To your point in that, my experience is after doing this many, many hundreds, maybe thousands of times at this point, the less I bring with me, the better it goes.
I'm nodding my head vigorously. You can't see that at home, I realize. Yeah, I, you know, it's, as you were talking, Travis, I was sitting here thinking, I have historically not been an agenda-driven one-on-one person. I've had reports that that's the way that they want to approach the one-on-one, and they bring their agenda. And if they have one, then I'll add items to it as well if there's things that I know that I need to bring up. Mm-hmm. But generally, the one-on-ones, the relationships that I have found, the way that I found that it works best is just to try to fit it to how the report wants to run the conversation. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, I'll start a one-on-one by just saying, hey, how's it going? Awkward silence. And then they start talking.
Yeah.
And over time, there's less and less of that awkward silence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mine is, what's on your mind? I totally stole that one too. I'm pretty like, yeah, that's not an original thought, but what's on your mind is like, it's one of those things that people, you can't answer that dishonestly.
That's my closer.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah. So I'll, you know, we'll get through all the things. The conversation will start waning and I will throw out a, so what else is on your mind? And there's almost always something. Like you think the conversation is over, you throw that question out, here comes more. And it's often the most important thing we've talked about the whole time.
Yep. They teach you in some leadership trainings, they'll teach you like, ask what else until people just are like, there's nothing else. Cause at a certain point you're going to freak people out and what else, but there's almost like, it's the line of how many times you can ask what else mm-hmm. is so much further than we think.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that is similar to that is silence. Silence feels a whole lot shorter to the person on the other end than it does to you when you're the one that's leaving the silence in the conversation. So we talked about what are the topics that, or Travis, you asked what are the topics that you bring up in every one-on-one over the course of a month. Or Brandon, you asked that, didn't you? And we didn't really answer that question. We kind of went on a bit of a bunny trail there. The one thing that I would say that actually answers that question is I try to be disciplined about bringing positive feedback to one-on-one every time I meet with the person. And that's a relatively new thing for me. And I was thinking back on where it came from. The only place that I can point out that it might have come from is Ted Lasso.
Outstanding. That's delightful. Here's what I love about that is we are, as an industry, and certainly me personally, conditioned to always be looking to the horizon. Like, here, we did the thing, you got your paycheck, and you move on. You fix the bug. That's the job. It's like the contrast between like the Mad Men style of management, that's what the money is for, and the Ted Lasso style of management of like, why would you do it if it wasn't joyful? Like, let's be doing this joyfully. And pausing to find the joy in this, I learned that from somebody who I worked for as a manager. They worked on one of my teams, and constantly helped me remember that we should be celebrating and we should be looking at what is joyful in the work that we're doing. And this person's impact on the teams that they worked on, like, honestly, like, this person had been a manager before, but was a direct report of mine on a couple of different teams I manage and completely transformed the way I manage. And that was one of the ways, is that Ted Lasso school of what's worth celebrating right now. And so what's worth celebrating, when I talk about things that are regular items, like at one point, Travis, you told me, I think it was on this podcast, that a manager's job is to see around corners for their team. So if I can see around a specific corner for a person, I want to make sure I share that with them. It's very easy to have like tough feedback for somebody. And the ratio of that's going to be really messed up if it's not like 4-to-1 positive to challenging someone, like, or better, like preferably 10-to-1, because why are they working there if they're not doing 10 good things for every time they need correction? Like, that's a more accurate representation of what's actually happening. Thank you. You know, like, I wouldn't get away with that at home for never saying thank you for, you know, my wife and I share duties. I want to be thanked when I'm cooking the dinner or do the dishes. And I want to make sure that I do that for, you know, people in my home. Why would I not do that at work? Yeah, it's the job, but it's also appreciated.
I mean, I think the other thing that it does for me is it pulls me out of sort of the negative mindset that we can sometimes get in as leaders, because we're exposed to an awful lot of mess that happens in the life of the business. And it's, you know, I mean, at the risk of torturing this metaphor too far, that is the Ted Lasso character, right? Like, he's going through some stuff, but that's not how he presents himself. He tries to find the positivity in the situation.
One thing that comes to mind on as you were talking about this, Brandon, is a relationship book. Is it the 4 or the 5 love languages? About generally intimate relationships, but how people want appreciation shown. And everybody has a different way that they do it. And I think that that's one key thing when you're talking about positive feedback and reinforcement, is how that person wants to receive it. And one question I've asked folks before that report to me is like, how do you like feedback? And I don't want the like, hey, something screwed up and I need to let you know that this was a screw up and we want to like not do that again. But also, how do you like positive feedback? Some people, if you were to drop that in the team Slack channel, they would freak out. The idea of being publicly called out for anything good or bad just petrifies them. They would much rather a private message to just say, hey, nice work on X, to know that they were seen. That's all they want. I mean, that's how they want to receive feedback. Other people would much rather like pop the champagne and let's make a big deal out of it. Some people would prefer to have it more immediate. Some people would prefer to have, hey, let's do this on a weekly cadence instead of calling it out as it happens. So that's a thing, a conversation that I'll have with someone who reports to me generally early on as well, in some of those early one-on-ones. Hey, how do you want feedback? So that I can tailor it. And I couch it in those words exactly, actually. Like, there's going to be times that I need to give you feedback, good and bad. How do you best receive that? And that helps make sure that I'm tailoring it to what they want. And frankly, lets them see that I'm making that effort, and that I value this relationship enough to have that question instead of, hey, here's how I provide feedback. So that's a lot of, especially those early conversations that I have, are very much about how do you want to handle this? How do you want to handle that? And that's a big part of the handing the agenda to them and say, hey, how do you want to have this meeting? I would love for you, here's the things I would love to be able to do for you, but it's yours. You drive it.
So we talked about some positive patterns of one-on-ones and some things that we try to do every time. What are some anti-patterns of one-on-ones? What are some of the ways these conversations can go south besides the status update?
Oh, I got this one. Can you guess yet? Can you already guess which one mine is?
I think I know what yours is, and I have one as well that I think is on your list, just lower than what I think your first one's going to be. But
yeah, monopolizing the time, baby. What percentage of this time do I occupy with my words?
You know what? That's totally not what I expected.
Oh, what did you think I was going to say?
So I thought you were going to say that they just turn into bitch sessions.
No, that was the one I was going to say.
Which is just like...
You're reading my mind, not Brandon's.
Okay, okay. I knew I was channeling from somebody.
I'm not in that headspace right now. That might have been what I would have said 4 weeks ago when I was at the tail end of my job. But no, if it really is like so easy to accidentally monopolize the time, mm-hmm. because part of what I'm doing is sharing context and part of what I'm doing is coaching. And it can be very easy to not allow space.
That allowing space is the most important part because, again, a thing you've said hundreds of time on this podcast, there's a massive power imbalance that we often forget as we go into this, especially as you start managing more and more senior people, because a good chunk of the senior people on your team, you're probably going to look up to technically because they are going to be far superior than you could ever possibly be. And so in your mind, like, you're on the other side of that dynamic, but that's never the case. You're always one with the quote unquote bigger title sitting at that table. So it's really easy to just take over and run by accident because people are deferring to you because, well, Brandon's my boss. And if he has something to say, it must be important. So I'll hold my peace for a little bit and let him go. And that comes back to something Nick mentioned earlier about allowing for silence. If you don't, for somebody like myself, at least, if I don't consciously try to create that space, it's really easy for it to get filled in. And to your point, the here's the context I'm going to be able to provide. So I'm going to take you around the corner and show you what's coming. And then we're going to go on this little detour. I'm going to show you this side street. There's a really cool store down this alley. And if you turn right on Thursdays, it's awesome. You should go there. And before you know it, we're off to the races and they're like, okay, well, I guess it's time. I got to go.
I'm afraid we're out of time.
I mean, so one thing that I would caveat there is it's not always wrong to monopolize the time. Sometimes you literally do need to take up most of the air in a one-on-one when they've asked you a question that takes a long time to explain. But you got to be careful that you're actually explaining the thing that they want you to explain and you're not just trying to verbally feel your way through the dark to get to an answer.
100%.
I think the trick to that I have not yet been successful in implementing other than just trying to like constantly like remind myself, like I put a little like bookmark in there, is actually a timer. Like there is studies about this that humans don't have the ability to hear a person for more than a few minutes at a stretch before going, what's happening again? Where am I? What is this person talking about? And so like if you're on a tear and you're more than 3 minutes into a diatribe, Let's take a breather and pause and check understanding.
The checking understanding is a great tool there. Pausing does that answer your question? Does that give you enough context? That question just by itself. And that helps guide, okay, what else do I need to provide? Yeah. So you asked me, what's the new marketing direction of the company? That's important to the thing that I'm working on. Okay, well, here's what I know about that. And I can tell you a little bit about it. And start with what I think is the basics of that. And then does that kind of give you an idea of where we're going? What other questions do you have about that? And try to make sure that I'm pushing the conversation back to them to make sure that they're guiding my answer instead of me walking into the next 18-month marketing plan. Because it may be that there's one specific piece that they're after that is relevant to them. And I don't have the full context of what they're asking. So I can start to answer it. And I would much rather start to answer a question and then recalibrate as I go. I always use the analogy of if you're 1% off, that's not that much. But if you're 1% off time after time after time, you look up and you're off to the side of where you intended to be, not just barely askew. But if you get that 1% off and then course correct, you can keep it on topic.
So I want to come back to the original question because it's fun. What about you, Nick? What anti-patterns have you seen or experienced in one-on-ones?
I mean, the one that Travis raised is one I think we should talk about, the gripe session. And yeah, not to say that they're universally bad. Sometimes that is the thing that your report most needs from you, is for you to give them a considerable amount of time in the one-on-one to just talk about the thing that's stuck in their craw. and they just need to get it off their back. Where it goes wrong is when it becomes pathological and repeated, and you've got somebody showing up to one-on-one who's negative week in, week out, has a ton of stuff to complain about. And if you don't start trying to steer some of that energy into productive actions, into helping them learn how to solve their own problem, they're just going to get mired into learned helplessness and believe that you're reinforcing the helplessness that they're bringing to the table.
You know what? I have a really good example of how that venting session can happen. I had to reschedule a peer one-on-one today, got pulled into a client meeting with another vendor. And suffice it to say, the vendor's presentation of the problem wasn't one that I necessarily agreed with, because it put a whole lot of the blame on us as a product. And it was just an hour of constantly having to correct the little dig here, the little dig there, the little dig here. So I come out of that meeting and go straight into the one-on-one that's already been delayed. And I get into it. I'm like, do you mind if I vent for just a minute? And they're like, yeah, absolutely. Let's hear it. And knew exactly what I was talking about, has been in that exact meeting before with other folks. Like, everybody's been there. Everybody's done it. We talked about it for a couple of minutes and like, can you believe that? Yeah, it's crazy. Okay, cool. Take some deep breaths and move on. And that was a positive, like, let's dispel this negative energy that's built up. But at the end of it, it was like, all right, now let's actually get into the real conversation that we're going to have. I think that's the venting that you want. And that is truly a venting at that point. The pressure is built up. Let's vent it out, and get back to a steady equilibrium. I think you're totally right though, Nick, if that turns into, a toxic conversation, where it is every single time there is this repeated thing or a repeated pattern of, it's not necessarily the same issue, but it's the same type of issue every single time. That's something that can bleed over into the rest of the culture of the team, which can be a very big negative. The big thing that I have as the biggest anti-pattern, for a one-on-one, which we mentioned early on, and it goes almost without saying, is the status update. And I think this is, in my experience, it's less of a deal the smaller the team is that you manage. As that team grows, it can become really easy as a manager to slip into the, I want this to be a status update conversation. Because as the team is growing, you have less and less exposure to what's happening across the whole team. And that can be really disconcerting. There's a whole thread we can pull on there as to why that's disconcerting. But if you're not careful and observing what you're bringing to the meeting, the questions you're asking, the way you're guiding the meeting, you can accidentally turn it into a status update. Even if you're trying not to, you can accidentally end up in that space. There's also, like, there are some managers who that's just what they want, the one-on-one. Well, this is a chance for you to tell me what's going on and for me to ask questions about it. I think that's not the best use of anyone's time. And whenever I end up in those situations, I'm always like, okay, well, what are we trying to get at here? What's the thing we're trying to accomplish with this status update? Okay, now how can we do it so that we don't have to both sit on a call at the exact same time to go over that? Are there conversations that need to be had synchronously as part of this? Or is this truly the meeting that could have been an email? And most status meetings could legitimately be an email.
So if somebody's constantly coming into one-on-one with status, mm-hmm. Is there something behind that? Are they trying to tell us something?
I hate to make sweeping statements, so I'll say it depends. But I think it heavily leans towards yeah. In my experience, when I've had that happen, it's generally somebody who doesn't feel seen, who doesn't feel valued. I'm not exactly sure what the precise word is there. Seen, valued feels like really, really heavy-handed, and I don't mean it to be that way. I think it could be a little bit more subtle than that. But in my experience, when I have pushed the meeting towards a, hey, let's make this open and let's have whatever conversation you want to. And they gravitate towards that. That's somebody that, that wants the validation that the work I'm doing is good and they don't feel like they've gotten it. So they don't feel like they've been seen, that they've been recognized, that their work is valued. I'm curious, Brandon, have you seen patterns like that or another root cause?
I can tell you when I do it, what it means.
What's it mean?
So whatever it is behind it, what they're saying is they think that you're the manager that needs that. So first and foremost, they're saying they think that that's what this relationship is.
Fair point.
So no value judgments attached to it. They just think that's what this is. Yeah. And so that might be worth exploring at that point. Like you said, it depends, and it may be worth asking and inquiring into it with that person. But I can tell you in my experience, it is, I go real status heavy when I'm not safe. When it's like, hey, the assumption here is not that I'm doing good work day to day and that I'm doing the right things. I need to bring you a list of the things that I'm working on so that you can stamp your approval on them and say, yes, this is what I want you doing. And there are forms of that, that I, even in healthy management relationships, that are useful, which is, hey, here are 10 things that are competing for my attention right now. I can focus on maybe three. Can you help me pick the three and provide some reasoning so that I can understand where I should be prioritizing my time? That's a healthy and useful question versus here is a list of all the things that I am currently doing and where I am with those things so that you know that I'm not doing anything.
Yeah.
So that you can go tell people that I'm doing a good job.
I think one of the key things you just underlined there, and I want to call that back out again, though, is the end result of the person bringing the status update. If the end result is to update you on the status of the things they're working on, and that's it, that's what I call the status update. The one you called out with the, hey, I've got 10 things, 20 things, 100 things that I could be working on. Here's my priority. Is that right? That's a priority check-in. And that's the type of, that's not a status update to me. It can veer very closely to that. But that's a, hey, it generally for me starts with, hey, I'm underwater. I can only do so much right now. Here's where I think the priorities are. So this is me talking to my boss. Do you have any other context that would say that I'm wrong? Or would you rearrange any of these? What would you change? It's pretty common for that to be like, well, yeah, the most important thing is definitely the most important thing, but 2 and 3, let's swap those. Here's the other piece that I have that makes sense from that. And I'll do the same thing with people that report to me. Generally people know the most important thing they could be doing. Generally, most people aren't working on just one thing. And the further down that list you go, the harder it is to have enough context to know what number 2, 3, 4, 8 is supposed to be. And depending on the environment that you're in, you could even end up in a situation where number 8 really feels important, because you've got some people who have a very urgent need, and they're being very loud about it. And that can cloud your judgment, but the broader understanding of the organization, which hopefully you as a boss can bring to your employees, would relegate that back to 8th and not the second most important thing you could be doing.
So coming back to, something that you had said earlier, Nick, about the sort of gripe session challenge of, because really, if you're doing it right, that is a component. If you're doing it right, you are a receptacle for other people's frustrations. And there's probably a whole separate episode on how to manage that. I think, it's a separate subtopic that we discussed as a potential topic before we even started recording this. So I don't want to delve too deeply into that. But what I will say is I've learned my manager archetype. And I am an empath and a fixer. And that is a very dangerous person to have as a manager. And it is a common enough archetype that I feel that it's worth calling this out. The danger in being a person who's sort of empathic in these one-on-ones, in these gripe sessions, my desire is to recognize what that person is saying, to build rapport with that person by not pushing back on them, even if sometimes I think that might be a little bit far. And so you're just sort of nodding, and I have to be careful not to go too far emotionally with them down the road that they're going down, because you can actually accidentally reinforce this person's viewpoint, which you then later find out was never true. Like it's a misunderstanding that this frustration is based on, or an assumption that hasn't been checked. And so, really at the end of it, sometimes the answer is like, okay. And we've said this before, what would you like me to do about that? As a manager, what would you like done? And boy, when I ask that question, about 75% of the time, the answer is, oh, nothing. Yeah. No, nothing. Please don't do anything. And the other problem though, is I'm a fixer. And this happened to me recently enough that I'm embarrassed that, somebody's in a one-on-one with me sharing some stuff. And it was wrong. I knew it was wrong. I knew how it was wrong. I knew how to fix what was wrong. And I went and tried to fix it. And I just made a mess. And it raised the awareness of the problem that was existing. But this person came back to me and said, Brandon, I never asked you to do anything about that, and I wish you wouldn't have. And I'm like, dang it. I've been doing this a while, and I did it again. So that's something to really watch out for. And so to build in those sort of checks for yourself before you act on a gripe session, like label it. Okay, this is a gripe session. Is this actionable? Am I just hearing something? How far do I go down with them to make sure, you know they feel heard? And you can just literally restate, usually in terms of their feelings. So what I'm hearing from you is that this is you feel frustrated. And they'll be, no, I'm not frustrated. I'm just, flustered, whatever. Like They will correct you if you're labeling the feelings incorrectly. And so, boy, it's just really easy to do the wrong thing in those gripe sessions. And that's actually, I think maybe this isn't true for everyone, but it is for me, like having a mental label to affix and be like, oh, this is a person filing a complaint. Before I do anything, let me make sure I understand how they feel about it and what they want me to do about it.
100%.
Because it's dangerous territory.
I think that's the value of that, the action items and having that conversation as part of the one-on-one of, hey, these are the things I'm going to try to do coming out of this, whatever those may be. And sometimes it may be fixing something, but if there's truly a thing that needs fixing, that you need to perform some sort of intervention on, that's going to end up as that action item. And you're going to talk about what are the actions that's going to be taken? What's the outcome going to be? Everybody's agreed on that and everybody's on the same page.
Yep. And I think it's important, you mentioned this is a common archetype. A lot of us got into management because we like people and we want to help people. We want to help them do their jobs better. We care about them. And I suspect the audience of this podcast especially weights towards that. And so there's probably an awful lot of us listening right now that are very much in that bucket where we are very empathetic and we are fixers. So this might be the most important thing that we say this whole episode is when somebody does have that gripe session, the clarifying question is, are you asking for help or do you just want to tell me about this? And I can help you come up with some strategies to approach it if you'd like.
That's so well phrased. Hang on, I want to restate that. Are you asking me for help or are you just, hang on, will you say that again? Are you asking me for help or are you just—
I mean, it's a recorded medium. Well, I don't even know what I said. I'll have to listen to it again.
We'll have to roll it back.
Are you asking for help or do you just want to tell me about this and I can help you come up with some strategies to approach it if you'd like?
Because it's saying that well is important.
I've had this conversation more times than I can count where, hey, here's a problem that I'm having. And we get to the end and I'm like, okay, so here's a couple of ways we go here. And I'm happy to help in any way that I can. So are you asking for me to help? I'm happy to try to intervene however I can. You just want to talk about it? I can be a sounding board. I'd help you. Like I can offer you some suggestions on how I'd approach it. Like I'm here to support you. How can I help you do that? Invariably that I've had two responses to that. One is that's the first time anybody's ever had a manager say that to them. And they're slightly taken aback and they, like, you can visibly see them go, what, huh? Well, I guess I hadn't thought about that. And I've literally had people say, I hadn't thought about that yet. I've also had folks who've managed other people and they're like, oh yeah, I know what you're doing. Yeah, no, I just wanted to talk about this. You don't need to do anything. Or no, I need a sounding board. Like what would you have changed in how I handled this? Or like if you've managed somebody and you've gone through this yourself, the second you kind of interrupt that conversation, or not interrupt, but cap off that conversation with that framing of, okay, so now what? And here's what we can do. Like, here's the things I see that I might be able to help on. The second you reframe it like that, they're instantly, they're like, yep, been here, done this. And their mind shifts straight into that gear. So it's in either one of those, that's a very successful outcome in my mind, is to have somebody either completely taken aback and like, well, I hadn't actually thought about what the outcome of this was going to be. Or to have the, oh yeah, no, I've done this too. Yeah, I know. I've been in your shoes.
I mean, the other thing that you can do, I would be remiss not mentioning one of my absolute favorite management phrases in this context. If you want to turn a gripe session into something productive really quickly, just ask, have you given them that feedback?
Yep. That's your mug, man. Have you told them that?
Because 9 times out of 10, they're giving you feedback and they're hoping you'll pick enough of it up to go and give it to the other person that they're complaining about. And you can set up a much more healthy team dynamic if you teach them how to deliver that feedback rather than doing the dirty work for them.
I think that's fabulous. And I also want to point out, you know, to borrow a programmer idiom, it might be you're just sort of giving them the rubber duck.
Yep.
Like the programmer idiom of, you know, you put a rubber duck on your monitor to talk to, because as soon as you explain your problem out loud to somebody, it untangles itself. Yeah. That happens in life and not, there is a, you know, you might be there as a rubber duck, but also don't forget you're not a rubber duck. You're a person with some organizational power. And it might just be, no, I wanted somebody with some organizational power to be aware of this thing that I didn't like. And I don't want any action right now, but I did want you to be aware of it. And so there's a third option in there besides like, I might not need coaching. I might not just need to talk this through and I might not need you to do anything, but I do want you to be aware of it. So there are enough possible desired outcomes for them out of this that it's really important to not assume.
100%. That's one thing that I've found myself doing, in one-on-ones with my bosses. I will prefix, hey, I'm letting you know this because, and then launch into what I'm letting them know. Because I have the awareness of having people bring different things to me, that I know that they're not necessarily going to understand exactly why I'm bringing up topic X. And more often than not, it is the, hey, I want you to be aware of this because I think there's a dragon around this corner. And I don't want this to surprise you. And that's a lot of what my conversations are, but that's informed by having been on the inverse side of that.
So I want to change the subject briefly to, there's something I would be remiss if I didn't share. And it's a piece of feedback that surprised me as I was transitioning out of my most recent job. I heard from multiple people, which is say it's two, but that's enough for me to start putting it together as anecdata, that the most value they got out of our one-on-one sessions was having their value to the company better understood. That I'm explaining the dynamic between here is why the company values you. Here's what they want from you. And that buys you room to play with a lot of the other components of your job. So I think people think that they have to be maxing out performance in 10, 12, 15 areas. And actually your work relationship is pretty simple. Here's what is expected. Here's what is perceived as value. Here's where customers are impacted by your work. And if you're performing that value, the calculation is actually really simple. And then the rest is yours to play with. And now you know what you can take off of the table. You can ask for learning opportunities. You can ask for growth opportunities. You can ask for promotions. And helping individuals kind of tease that out and understanding them well enough to explain to them why they're uniquely suited to that. Here are the things that you do really well on a consistent basis. Here are your gifts that you have. Here are your gifts that you bring to the team, whether it's maybe they're the key mentor on the team, or maybe they're the person that just never gives up on, you know, on digging in on a difficult bug or something like that. Whatever it is that they're sort of like, they bring some unique things to the table. And when you can kind of raise that up for them, they go, oh, that's how they know they're safe. Like, here, when you're playing to your strengths, you're going to do great. And then you have lots of room. And it's kind of that same theme of reminding them that there's a 10-to-1 ratio of why they're valued to what they could continue to work on.
So this has been a great conversation, y'all. I do want to call out that one of the things that we've done here, is really focus on the tactical. How do you have a one-on-one? How do you create a space for a one-on-one? And what are the things that you should be looking at for a positive or a negative one-on-one experience? There's a whole bunch more that we could dive into, and a whole bunch of things that feed into one-on-one, but are also part of the bigger, broader job of being a manager. We'll explore those. And I think in a good chunk of the podcasts that we've done, we end up calling out, this is something you would talk about in a one-on-one, or this is something that you might have a one-on-one conversation about. So to kind of, to me, there is almost this disservice to the one-on-one to call it out as this separate thing, but it is a really important thing. And hopefully this has been really valuable, to our listeners. As we kind of wrap it up, are there any thoughts that y'all have, like things you'd want to share, as, your main goal? Like what's your main focus? I mentioned earlier that one of my main ones is, how do we expand the relationship that we have, when we get out of that conversation, and is it expanding and becoming, a more full, relationship where we have broader trust, where we have a higher bandwidth of communication? For y'all, what would you view as one of the key things that you have? Nick, anything jump to mind for you?
Yeah, I'm going to answer it a little bit roundabout. I'm going to start by saying that there's no right way to conduct a one-on-one. It's sure. Tempting, especially when you're first getting into management, to kind of look around and see how other managers do this and try to figure out the one magical golden way to conduct a one-on-one. There's not one. Every manager does this differently. So as long as you're finding a strategy that gets you repeatably to a place where the person on the other end is feeling heard, that you're building rapport, that you're having good conversations that aren't just status updates, keep doing what you're doing because it's working. Don't look around for some magical way to do it. There's no right way to do a one-on-one as long as you're finding a way to a productive conversation.
For me, I really like that first and foremost. I think that's a good reminder and something I want to process because I think it can be easy to fall into that. Even when you think you figured something out, like, oh, this must be good for everyone. The goals that you brought up earlier of keeping in mind of building that trust relationship and teaching people that they can trust you, and then you can use that to bootstrap trust with other people. Really cool stuff follows from that. For me, the number one objective I have, and I think this is my bias as a person going into a new role, the number one job I feel like I have in one-on-ones is to have somebody teach me how to manage them. I will say that, and I can say that with some amount of confidence, knowing that I'm going to show them that I mean that over the course of time. And I wouldn't say that if I didn't have the experience of knowing that I've done this enough times that I'm going to show them that I'm having them teach me how to manage them, and I'm listening, and I'm responding, and tailoring the way that this management reporting relationship works to the responses and to what they teach me through the course of those one-on-ones. Well, for everybody listening, thank you very much for joining us. Thanks for waiting for this latest episode. We are always excited to get to talk to each other, and we're especially excited when we get to talk about a topic that we care about as much as this one. We hope you found some value in it. If you would like to get a hold of us, we are on Twitter at Managing Up Show. We're also individually on Twitter. I am Tev Eiking on Twitter.
I am N Means on Twitter.
And I am T Swice Good Most Everywhere.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much, and we will see you again next time.
Thanks, y'all.